做不好的评估。
Miguel. Good morning, Judge Santel, Judge Griffith, Judge Kavanaugh. I'm Robert Coulter. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This action was brought by the Timbisha Shoshone tribe to stop the federal government from taking a fund of money that it holds in trust for the tribe and other tribes, and to prevent the federal government from dispersing that money to others. The Western Shoshone Claims Distribution Act, which directs that the money be taken and dispersed to others, does so without providing compensation.
What others is this you're talking about? What others is this you're talking about?
Oh, the other Western Shoshone tribes. Right. There are about 8 others.
Make sure we're not, you're not making any claim that anybody other than Shoshones are getting the money, right? It's only a matter of who constitutes which tribe?
Well, no. Actually, the question is whether the government has the authority to take the money from tribes and distribute it to individuals who may or may not be members of the tribes. Some of them clearly are not members of any of the tribes. Congress did not require that. Congress made its own rules about who the money would be distributed to, and many of the Timbisha Shoshone people will receive nothing. But that actually is a separate issue that is not really dispositive. The question is whether the government can, consistent with the Fifth Amendment, take a fund of money from a tribe and give it to anyone else.
Isn't there a precedent question, and that is, who can challenge that? Who has the authority to do that? And we have a letter from the Assistant Secretary, Secretary Echohawk, saying that the group that you represent doesn't have authority to be here. So how do we deal with that?
Well, let me address that. Certainly, first of all, a tribe has authority, has standing to protect its own assets, its own property. I understand.
Well, you're here, yes, purporting to represent the tribe. The question that is rather vexing is, how does your individual client, as it were, have any more authority to make decisions on behalf of the tribe than anyone else?
Well, because my client is the lawful tribal government of the Timbisha Shoshone
That's
tribe.
That's not what Deputy Secretary Echohawk told us.
Well, I understand, but the Assistant Secretary doesn't have the authority to designate who is.
Nor do you.
No, that's
Nor
correct.
And
only the Timbisha Shoshone tribe does.
What is the documentation here that the person who retained you and apparently is your active persons are the government of the Shoshone? I mean, the documents we saw said they ran third in the election, or the one individual did at least.
Well, that was an election conducted pursuant to the Assistant Secretary's directions, where a lot of people who are not members of the tribe were permitted to vote and run for office.
We're not going to have the rolls fight today. I mean, there can be rolls fights in lots of tribal elections. You know that.
Sure.
I know that. But
sure, and that isn't to be resolved here.
That's not going to be resolved here. But what's the documentation in front of us that your client has the individuals who have retained you have the authority to speak on behalf of the tribe?
There's a sworn statement by Joe Kennedy, who was and still is the chairman of the tribal council of the Timbisha Shoshone tribe, duly elected. I went out there, I met with the whole tribal council. They decided unanimously to retain me for the purpose of filing this lawsuit on behalf of the tribe. There was no other government recognized by the Department of the Interior. They were the tribal government, they still are.
At that time, but hasn't recognition occurred since then? These are The secretary, late-breaking events.
Yes. The assistant secretary made a decision on July 29th, but the assistant secretary has no authority to designate who is and who is not the government of the Timbuktu-Shoshone tribe.
Who has the authority to recognize?
The assistant secretary.
Not just an internal matter for the tribe at this point. We're talking about the recognition. And who has the authority to recognize?
The assistant secretary has limited authority to recognize an Indian government for purposes of the Interior Department's relations with that government. But that decision is not binding on the tribe. That's federal law. And it's not binding on a federal court. That's part of federal law as well. The tribe alone has exclusive authority to determine who is and who isn't the government of the tribe.
Right now, we have a responsibility to make that determination. And other than the claim of Kennedy, what other documentation is there that should convince us that he would have authority to speak for the tribe in the face of the communications from Assistant Secretary Echohawk?
We have the complaint, of course.
No, we have the complaint. That is no evidence.
I understand that.
We're trying to decide if you have the authority to make that complaint.
I understand that, but the government has actually not presented any evidence in its own behalf. They've simply submitted a decision by the assistant secretary, a unilateral decision that is under challenge. It is not lawful. It is not binding on this court or on the tribe.
Is it final agency action?
Yes, it is, and it has been challenged in a separate lawsuit in the Eastern District of California. With no evidentiary basis, simply a unilateral administrative act that is under challenge, that is on its face unlawful, not binding on this court, not binding on the tribe.
If Assistant Secretary Echohawk is right about it, then you don't have authority to represent the tribe, right? Somebody else, some other set of folks would need to hire you. Isn't that right? If he's right, just for sake of argument.
It depends on what you mean by if he's right. He doesn't have the authority to determine that.
You're fighting the hypothetical. If he has made a correct determination, if he has made a valid determination, then you can't represent the tribe. Is that correct?
Let me see if that's actually logically so, but I believe if the secretary really has that authority, which he doesn't, then I suppose so.
Quit fighting the hypothetical and answer the question we're trying to ask.
Of course, if the Secretary of the Interior has the authority to oust me, well, then he does.
And why shouldn't we at least wait to see the result of that?
Should you wait to see? Well, the trouble is, first, that the showing at this time is insufficient. They haven't submitted any evidence. They've submitted only an administrative decision that is facially unlawful. It's beyond the department's power. Second, they haven't created a foundation in the record for establishing that we don't have authority. They're simply trying to evade this appeal by pretending to have the authority to oust their opponent from the capacity to maintain the suit. Now, suppose this court were to wait. The money is due to be distributed further. The remaining money, they have said in their brief, is due to be distributed in a few weeks, in December. I fear that the money will be lost, the opportunity for a remedy will be lost. The government will be in the position of simply ousting their opponent by their own illegal act, evading judicial review, and thus getting away with an excess of authority. That's the problem with waiting. On the other hand, even though, in my opinion, this showing is very inadequate, they have not made a sufficiently substantial showing that the assistant secretary is right, or that the assistant secretary has the authority to oust the plaintiff's appellants from their authority and to oust this court of its jurisdiction. If, however, the court believes there is a sufficient doubt that there really is no jurisdiction, then there could be a remand to the district court to litigate these issues. It's perplexing that the government has not taken a consistent position about this. They haven't asked for a remand to determine these issues. The government actually conceded, clearly stated, that this court does have jurisdiction in its brief in June. Then, just 7 days ago, they began to claim that this court doesn't have jurisdiction because of a unilateral decision by the assistant secretary. That's just not an adequate showing.
This was not a bolt of the blue decision by the assistant secretary. The assistant secretary and the persons who at least claim to be the constituents of the tribe have been wrestling with the question of tribal governance for some time, haven't they? I mean, this election was held in when? May? When was the election where Kennedy ran third?
That was in April.
April. Okay. So this is not some bolt out of the blue that you've been struck with here.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. I would say, though, that the Department of Interior, for the most part, either recognized the Timbuktu-Shoshone government that I represent, or they took a neutral position.
It seemed to be what they mostly were doing, trying to avoid taking position.
Until after we filed this lawsuit.
And in fact, forced them to make the decision.
I don't know if it forced them to make the decision, but in any event, they did seem to turn against this government after this lawsuit was underway. In fact, after this appeal was underway. The tribe itself, apart from what they've been ordered to do by the Secretary of the Interior unlawfully, the tribe has taken no action at all to oust the plaintiff's appellants from their authority. Nothing like that has happened, and only the tribe can do that. So I don't think that a remand for litigation of the issue of authority is actually called for unless the court believes that it actually doesn't have jurisdiction.
In your view, how are we supposed to react when someone comes before saying they represent the tribe and the government says, no, they actually don't represent the tribe? According to you, what would be our way out of this? Because the remedies you're seeking are on behalf of the tribe, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. No question that determining jurisdiction is very important, but it must be done either on the basis of the pleadings or on the basis of the record in the court below. Somehow there must be an evidentiary basis for it. It can't be a good rule to simply permit one of the litigants to say who does and doesn't represent their opponent.
Well, can it be a good rule for one litigant to be able to say that he does or doesn't represent somebody else who is the named party in the suit? Why is that any better rule? Either way, you're dealing with a claim, not a self-evident fact.
There's a time and place for litigating our authority.
Isn't that the question? Are you asking us to remand, then, to litigate that authority? Now, I understand we gave you the opportunity, both sides the opportunity, to brief this authority question, and I have to say that the briefs were not nearly as much help as I had hoped they would be. But why isn't, if this turns out to be the salient question, why isn't the remedy the proper thing for us to do to vacate and remand to litigate that question?
Several reasons. I see that I'd like to have a little time for rebuttal, but
well,
quickly.
You may or may not have some.
All right.
But we will probably give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal, but when we're asking you questions.
I understand.
We do not. The late Judge Spotswood Robinson said these lights control the bar. Only God controls the bench. We don't have any divine order to not keep going. So deal with the question.
Good. I think the answer to your question is this. This question can be decided on the basis of law that's before the court now, namely the legal inadequacy of the assistant secretary's decision. He simply doesn't have authority to do that. Secondly, if there is to be a remand, it's going to mean there needs to be an injunction to prevent the loss of the fund in the meantime. Also, the district court's decision on the motion to dismiss needs to be vacated. Then the...
I'm assuming that we've not made a Gregg's decision at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If I said vacate and remand, I meant we would be vacating whatever order is outstanding,
yes,
remanding for the litigation of this question. And probably we're not going to get to the merits arguments, I guess, today. But is it your position? I'll ask the governor, I'll let you get back up for a moment. Your time is up, and so unless my colleagues have further questions, let's hear from the governor.
Thank you.
Unless my colleagues have other thoughts, I think you may want to start with the authority question.
Very good, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Brian Toth from Department of Justice. On behalf of the Department of the Interior, with me at council table is Mr. Jim Porter from the Office of the Solicitor, Department of the Interior. The case has essentially been overtaken by events, and I want to address the question that is most vexing to me about the remedy if this court were to find that there is a question about jurisdiction, as we've urged. I think this court, you know, has the option to stay pending a decision in the litigation in the Eastern District of California, but I think, you know, this court probably knows that could potentially take years with the possibility of appeal, and it's probably not something this court would want to do, to have this court the case open on the docket for that long. But it is an option. I would urge the court that it can decide its own jurisdiction. We are looking at a different situation.
Yes. Is this governed by Rule 9 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure? The capacity or authority to sue in general, except when required to show that the court has jurisdiction, a pleading shall not allege, need not allege, be a party's authority to sue or be sued in a representative capacity. If that governs, then doesn't that defense of Rule 12 does not include authority or lack of authority as a defense that can be raised by motion and adjudicated as a jurisdictional motion. So if Rule 9 governs, then isn't it the case that this should have been decided, should not have been decided on the motion to dismiss, which it actually, I guess, wasn't. But anyhow, how can we decide this without an evidentiary record, without at least the joinder of pleadings and perhaps a summary judgment? But can we decide this authority question on a jurisdictional Rule 12 type basis?
I think you can in
How can we in light of the way the rules are written?
Very well. I mean, I do take your point well.
That's
about
the
capacity.
That's the sort of thing I hoped would be in the briefs and...
Understood, Your
Honor.
Didn't find
a lot on it.
Understood. You know, this does have the flavor of capacity, and the district court analyzed standing in terms of the date the complaint was filed, which is certainly appropriate. Our contention is that even if this does relate to authority that could be raised as a defense under Rule 9, it has a bearing on whether there's a live case or controversy in this court of appeals. So insofar as that question is involved, I think the court can examine jurisdictional facts. It can take judicial notice of the Assistant Secretary's decision, and it can use and rely upon the administrative presumption of regularity to find that it will, there just has not been
that's
clear.
That's not a conclusive presumption, is it?
No, that's accurate, Your Honor.
Right. And since it's not a conclusive presumption, why would that not be an item to be considered in an evidentiary proceeding in a court of first instance rather than in an appellate court on a blank record?
Understood, Your Honor. And there is case law indicating that where, especially in the context of mootness, there are non-record facts that could be determinative of that issue, that a remand to the district court on that limited question is appropriate. So it certainly would be in this court's authority to do that. I would submit that we have seen no interest by the new tribal government in pursuing this suit based on the record here. We have the new tribal chair on record in the district court as filing an amicus brief supporting dismissal of the suit. So there's a question whether the newly elected tribal council, if substituted, would continue to pursue this litigation at all. It might be appropriate in that regard to order the new council substituted and give them an opportunity to voluntarily dismiss the appeal. But it is a vexing question, I do admit.
Yet normally, the substitution of a successor is a very simple process, so there isn't a question as to whether it is, in fact, a successor.
Yes.
That is, we have lots of lawsuits that were filed against Bush, and Obama proceeds as a successor. But here there is a dispute as to the legitimacy of the succession. To what extent is the Secretary's determination conclusive, and to what extent is that? There's a lawsuit going on about it, apparently, in California.
There is, but the subject of the lawsuit is the Assistant Secretary's decision. I mean, you could look to the conclusion of the tribal remedies here. There was an election held by the tribe. There was an appeal by at least one of the plaintiffs to the tribe's election commission, which denied that appeal. And because there's no tribal court, that was the exhaustion of the tribal remedies for that intra-tribal dispute. Now, the plaintiffs make the argument that the tribal election, the special election held in April, would not have been valid but for the assistant secretary's order. But that's a question of interpreting tribal law, whether the tribal election ordinance or the tribal constitution would permit a special election anyway. And that's not, you know, the interpretation of tribal law is not something that we're inviting this court to get into, and it's an area that courts have typically deferred to tribes. So I would propose that in place of deferring to the assistant secretary's decision, what you have is the election itself. And that is the resolution of the intertribal conflict as far as this court ought to be concerned. Now, I understand the plaintiffs may dispute that, but they have other fora for that, namely the whatever fora they may have in their tribal remedies, a new election that happens annually or what have you. But it's not for this court to get into those matters. It can simply defer to the tribe's resolution of its own matters. I want to address the question of remedy if this court were to remand for the determination of jurisdiction. We did state in our brief that the distribution was expected to occur, be complete by the end of this year. According to BIA's public website, that date has now changed, and they now estimate that it'll be complete in June of next year. So that's a public fact, and the court can take notice of that. I would like to address a little bit of confusion about who benefits from the statute and whether this is really just a dispute about whether Congress has given the money to some Shoshones and not others. Indeed, that is what is going on here. And I think there's a little bit of misunderstanding about the terms when we're throwing around the terms tribe and individuals. The award by the Indian Claims Commission was for an identifiable group. The act allowed claims to be brought, collective claims, on behalf of not only tribes, but also bands of Indians and identifiable groups of Indians. Now, that's important because the purpose of the Claims Commission was to remedy wrongs that occurred a century before. And people who may have been decimated by whatever actions the federal government might have been responsible for might not be around 100 years later to be the beneficiaries of any compensation. So this task of determining, first of all, the Claims Commission entertained these claims that were collective, and it selected a representative tribe. In this case here, it was the Timok tribe, who was the representative before the Claims Commission of the Western Shoshone identifiable group. Now, that representative was not necessarily the party that was going to receive compensation at the end of the day. And our brief cites to the Court of Claims decision in the Cherokee Freedman case, which I think lays this out very nicely, the mechanics of how the Claims Commission worked. The question of who receives payment at the end of the day has always been understood to be one for Congress. Even though the Claims Commission had authority to issue judgments and to set an amount and say the government's liable for $26 million to the identifiable group, it was up to Congress. By the statute creating the commission itself, the commission had no authority to disperse money to particular individuals or order that particular individuals or particular tribes should receive payment. There was longstanding congressional policy, approximately 10 years of restrictions on the annual appropriations for the Department of the Interior, restricting the use of the funds to be paid for judgments until Congress enacted legislation with a distribution plan. Further, when in the early 70s, Congress passed the Use and Distribution Act, It codified a mechanism of passing legislation that would enact a plan before the money could be distributed. Now, a plan was not submitted here for a number of years, decades, because of the conflicts and the disagreement among the potential beneficiaries of the fund. But those difficult questions were expressly left for Congress, and that's been recognized by the Court of Claims. It's implicit in the congressional policy in the 60s through the annual appropriation riders. It's made part and parcel of the Use and Distribution Act. So the question of who receives payment of the award at the end of the day is very different from who was the litigant before the Claims Commission. So I think when we're talking about tribes being members of the identifiable group, that's really not the right way to look at it. You really have to look at it through the lens of the language in the Indian Claims Commission Act, which talks about identifiable groups only insofar as though they are the group that has been wronged a century before. And that's the fact-intensive determination that the Claims Commission had to make. It was indeed very fact-intensive. The Claims Commission was, you know, essentially an arm of Congress. It had broad investigatory powers. These tasks were given to the Commission, and then it was up to Congress to decide who, in its judgment, ought to receive the compensation.
So, can I go back to the recognition question again?
Yes.
So your opposing counsel has made the point that the recognition authority that the executive exercises when dealing with tribes is of a limited nature. Does it control who can appear in federal courts on behalf of the tribe?
It doesn't under the federal question jurisdictional statute. It would under, I'm trying to put my hands on it now, it's a jurisdictional statute that used to be relevant because before the Congress lifted the monetary limitation on the federal question statute. I apologize, I'm not able to put my hands on the provision right now. But it doesn't, because federal question, the general federal question statute was the basis of jurisdiction here, that does not strictly affect the.
What I'm getting at is when the Secretary recognizes Group X as being the representatives of the tribe, with that recognition, does that group then have authority to come to the federal courts and say, we are the tribe? Is that part of what goes with it? Is it, or can another group contest that?
Well, you know, that's a difficult question. I don't think there's a
may be an important question.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. The reason Interior recognizes tribes is for the purposes of conducting government-to-government relations.
Right.
But I can't say
that
that
binds. Part of that
binds,
includes access to the federal courts is what I'm wondering.
I think that's.
On behalf of the tribe.
I think you could argue that. I mean, this court,
well,
you know, court.
It's not just could argue.
No,
isn't it what we have to confront? As I said, the response from counsel for both parties to our inquiry has not been as helpful as we would have hoped.
Understood.
Did you not understand that this is why we asked you to rebrief to get this question?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, let me try and address this question another way. When there are periods where Interior recognizes no government, it seems, as happened at the outset of the suit, it seems that inaction by the Secretary of the Interior should not foreclose a group from going into federal court and colorably alleging that they have a claim on behalf of the tribe. That was what the situation we had at the outset of the suit. Now things have changed, and the Secretary of the Interior has recognized a group. And I think that is different. And I think, you know, although there's no regulation or statute that says this binds the judiciary, the Secretary of the Interior does have plenary power to manage the Indian affairs and Indian relations with the United States. That's under.
Well, it'd be chaotic otherwise, wouldn't it?
Exactly, yes. And, you know, it
wouldn't make any sense to have the Secretary recognizing one group as representative of the tribe and then having another purported representative of the tribe bringing various lawsuits that are inconsistent with what the recognized group, right? It just strikes me as that is not a workable system.
Yes, I think that's true. And it just as courts.
This would be consistent with the entities that are foreign governments elsewhere in the world. That is to say, it's only going to be a recognized government that could come in here and sue on behalf of Turkey.
Yes.
You couldn't have a rebel group of Turks come in and say, we're suing on behalf of Turkey.
And we would defer to the executive in their judgment about who represents Turkey, right?
Yes, that's accurate. I think that's a good analogy to the foreign policy
context. I don't think it's just an analogy. I think it's pretty much, we recognize a continuing sovereignty, albeit limited and dependent, in the Indian nations, and what we're talking about here is sovereignty.
That's right. That's right, Your Honor. And I think that's confirmed by the Miwok case that we cited, the California Valley Miwok case, that the Secretary of the Interior does have broad power under Section 2 of Title 25, United States Code, to manage Indian affairs. And
do you know of any instance where a federal court has overturned the Secretary's recognition of a tribal?
I can't think offhand that there has been. I imagine there has been.
The opposing counsel may be.
I imagine there has been. I can't think of a specific case. But okay. We're certainly raising defenses in the Eastern District of California that this is a political question. Aspects of the case are a political question. I don't know. This court does not need to reach that issue, but I do believe that the analogy to the foreign policy context is appropriate, that even if this is not reviewable, it's something that the executive should get broad deference to in light of the Secretary of the Interior's mandate regarding Indian affairs.
You're saying the in California, you're arguing that the recognition issue is a political question, not just justiciable.
Some of the claims in that case. Yes, Your Honor. If the court has any other questions, I'm happy to address them, but my time is up.
Okay, thank you, counsel. We'll give appellant 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Quite a few things. What opposing counsel has said is absolutely not the law. Absolutely not the law.
The Nothing Supreme he Court, said was the law?
What he was saying...
You better get to what the point is you're trying to make. Okay?
All right. The Secretary of the Interior does not have the authority to designate who does and does not have authority to bring lawsuits. Not the law. Wheeler versus Swimmer, Wheeler versus the United States, and Santa Clara Pueblo versus... It's a Supreme Court decision. We've cited it in our brief. The decision about who is the lawful representative of a tribe is exclusively the decision of the tribe itself. If there's
That fine and well and good. That's true of all sovereigns, that the United States is not choosing the government for any other sovereign entity either. But for purposes of coming into the United States and doing business or coming into the court, there has to be somebody who makes the determination as to what that sovereignty's people have chosen as their government. And that to go to, what you're saying is just not coming to grips with that at all.
Yes,
the secretary says the tribe did choose this other group to be the government. You're saying the tribe did not choose it. We have to know who makes the decision as to which of you is correct for purposes of litigation.
The law is that the secretary does not make that decision ever.
So you say the court has to make the decision?
That's right. That can be litigated in the district court. The decisions are absolutely clear on this. It is not a political question.
That's what courts do in California, right?
That's what the court is doing in California. Right. It's been done any number of times before. There's a recent example.
Why would we be doing the same thing that the court in California is doing?
Well, I don't think you should. In my opinion, the authority of the plaintiff's appellants to proceed is clear. It hasn't been substantially challenged, and this appeal ought to proceed. It isn't a political question. It's open to dispute. Federal courts do overturn the secretary's decision, as in the ransom case with the Mohawks in New York State.
The precondition to your proceeding here is that you're the valid representative. As of now, the executive branch has determined that you're not. You're seeking to overturn that in the court in California, but unless and until that's overturned, I don't see how we can proceed.
Well, it's not binding. The assistant secretary's determination is not binding on this court, and unless it's a lawful exercise of the assistant secretary's authority.
Isn't it binding unless and until you have a court where you're directly reviewing the determination?
No, there is no such presumption.
For our purposes.
No, actually that's not the case. This is not like foreign governments where there's a political question. That just isn't so.
Counsel, you're saying that doesn't make it so. The fact that you say that it's not a question for the executive does not mean it's not a question for the executive. Somehow or other, if we have lawsuits going on in this court by people who claim to represent others than themselves, there has to be some way by which that is determined. Now, when it is foreign sovereigns, that is, the executive made that determination. When it's a Indian tribe, the executive has made that determination. Now, it may or may not be binding. It may or may not have preclusive effect. But there has to be a way to keep people from coming in here representing your tribe that don't represent your tribe.
I understand. We wouldn't want to see another faction coming in pretending either.
You just told us they could. I mean, effectively, if we have to take the pleading, then if they come in and say they're the tribe, according to the way you're looking at it.
The authority of the plaintiffs can always be challenged through a normal motion in the district court. That's an affirmative defense. It can be litigated there. It should be litigated there. That's how that is determined. The authority, by the way, of the United States to decide who receives the Claims Commission award is not at all what opposing counsel said. Congress absolutely retained no authority to make that determination once the judgment was made, and that was decided by the Supreme Court in United States versus Dan.
There's no judgment here that says what individuals or even what specific tribes get what out of this judgment, is it?
There was a
claims determination made that somebody gets recompense for the wrong that was done over a century ago now. Now, that left open the sorting out of precisely who got what, didn't it?
No, it only to a certain extent. The judgment was much more specific than that. It was made to an identifiable group that was made up exclusively of tribes that were known, they were definite, they were named, and the government admits and has several times conceded that the Timbisha Shoshone tribe is one of those tribes. It did not leave Congress to sort out who got what, but it is true that something needs to be done to distribute that fund. Yep. The Claims Commission left some of the work undone. That part is true, but Congress did not retain authority to take that fund away from the tribes that were explicitly awarded the judgment. That was decided in United States versus Dan. That's settled.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Unless my colleagues have further questions, the case is submitted.